Welcome back to the deep dive. Today we're going to be doing kind of a blast from the past, a little bit of a history lesson, but also a look at a case that has some really, really interesting implications for how we think about how corporations work and the power dynamics inside of them.
Absolutely.
So we're talking about Price v. Gurney, a Supreme Court case back in 1945. And, you know, I think a lot of people, when they hear 1945, they're like, oh, this is ancient history. Like, why does this matter to me?
Exactly.
But, you know, one of the things that we love to do on this show is really, like, dig in and show how these, you know, even really old cases still have these, like, ripple effects into how business gets done today.
Totally. And this one in particular, I mean, this is a really fundamental case when we think about, like, who controls a corporation. You know, when it's facing, like, really serious financial headwinds.
It's almost like who gets to decide when to, like, you know, call it quits, basically.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. Like, if a company's going towards a cliff, who's hitting the brakes? Who's steering?
Exactly. Yeah. So that's, I think that's a really good way to put it. So Price v. Gurney, and our mission today is to really try to break down what are the core principles that the court, you know, laid out in this decision, and how does that still matter, right? Like, why is this something that still affects how shareholders can, you know, what they can do, what they can't do when a company is, you know, potentially going bankrupt?
Absolutely. And I think what's so interesting about this case is that it seems like a really narrow legal question.
Right.
Like, really specific. But the implications, like you said, kind of radiate outward.
Yeah, totally.
Into how we think about bankruptcy, who has the power in a corporation.
Totally. And the sources that we're going to be drawing on today are excerpts from basically, you know, a detailed brief and a standard brief.
Okay,
great. Like this, just to kind of get into the nitty gritty of what happened. Okay, so I think to start to really understand Price v. Gurney, we have to kind of set the stage and understand what was going on that led to this case.
Right.
And, you know, it all starts with the Western Tool and Manufacturing Company. It's an Ohio corporation.
Okay.
And they had defaulted on some of their bonds.
Okay. So they're in financial trouble.
Yeah. So not a great place to be. And, you know, one of the things that happens a lot of times when companies default on bonds is the bondholders, the people who lent them the money, they want to make sure that they're going to get, you know, as much back as they can.
Of course. Yeah.
So in this case, they actually, the bondholders had gained control of the company.
Okay.
Through something called a voting trust.
Interesting. So.
Yeah. Do you want to like.
Yeah. Break down what a voting trust is. So basically a voting trust is shareholders can agree to transfer their voting rights to a trustee. And then that trustee essentially votes the shares according to, like, you know, whatever the terms of the trust are.
Got it. Okay.
In this case, it would have been for the benefit of the bondholders.
Right. Yeah.
So the bondholders essentially had control of the company.
Which, you know, to me already like raises some like interesting questions.
Yeah, totally.
Because, you know, in a typical situation, you've got the shareholders of a company.
Right.
And then they elect a board of directors.
Right.
And the board of directors is supposed to like run the company.
Yeah.
But in this case, you know, it's not like a hostile takeover.
Right.
But it's like the bondholders have essentially like, you know, taken the reins.
Yeah, they've stepped in because the company's in financial distress.
Right. And this is actually, this voting trust, like this wasn't something new.
Okay.
This had actually been in place for like 20 years.
Wow. Okay.
So like for two decades, the bondholders had essentially been like calling the shots.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, already it's just, it's a really interesting situation.
That's a long time for a voting trust to be in place. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder like what the original reasoning for that was.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if the briefs really get into like the genesis of that, but
sure. Yeah.
It's interesting to think about like what circumstances would lead to that happening. And it gets, I think, even more interesting because the people who are actually acting as the voting trustees.
Okay.
So the people who actually held the power to vote the shares.
Right.
They also held positions as directors and officers within the company.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, you know, like talk about a potential conflict of interest.
Yeah, that's a huge conflict of interest. So you've got people who are supposed to be like, you know, managing the company in the best interests of presumably like the shareholders.
Right.
But they're also representing the bondholders.
Yeah. And who have like a very specific interest. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. They want to get their money back.
Yeah. So it's just, it's a really interesting setup.
Yeah. It's a powder keg for sure.
So we've got this company, Western Tool and Manufacturing. They're in default on their bonds. Mm-hmm. You've got this voting trust that's been in place for 2 decades.
Right.
The bondholders are in control, and the people who are like running the voting trust are also directors and officers in the company.
Yeah.
So at this point, because the company's in default, a foreclosure action had been started.
Okay.
And a receiver had been appointed to kind of oversee things.
Okay.
And guess what? The receiver was also one of these voting trustees.
Wow. Okay. So it's all very interconnected.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all very tight knit.
It seems like the bondholders have a pretty tight grip on this company at this point.
Yeah, for sure. So enter Mr. Gurney.
Okay.
He's a shareholder. And, you know, he's looking at this situation. He's like, I don't like how this is playing out.
Right.
So he tried to intervene in the foreclosure proceeding.
Okay.
You know, tried to kind of like get involved and, you know, see what's going on.
Yeah.
But then he takes things a step further. And he files a petition for reorganization under Chapter X of the Bankruptcy Act.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Now, I'll just pause here for a second because, you know, not all of our listeners are going to be like super familiar with bankruptcy law.
Right. Yeah.
So Chapter X, this is like a specific part of the old bankruptcy law that was designed for these corporate reorganizations.
Oh, okay.
So essentially it's like, you know, if you're a company and you're in a lot of debt, you know, maybe you're not totally like, you know, sunk yet.
Yeah.
But you need to figure out a way to restructure things
mm-hmm.
to like survive. Chapter X is a process for doing that.
Okay. Got it.
But the key thing here is that Gurney is trying to do this. He's trying to file this Chapter X petition on behalf of the corporation.
Right.
He's not just acting for himself as a shareholder. He's trying to like do this
right.
for the entire company.
Yeah. So he's essentially like taking it upon himself to try to rescue the company.
Yeah. And he didn't, the key thing here is, he didn't get authorization from the board of directors to do this.
Oh, wow. Okay. So he's like going rogue almost.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. So, and this is where we get into, I think, like one of the key legal principles of the case,
mm-hmm.
which is under Ohio law, and this is where Western Tool and Manufacturing was incorporated under Ohio law,
mm-hmm.
the management of a corporation is vested in its board of directors.
Right.
So this is a pretty standard principle of corporate law across most states.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, you have the shareholders, they elect the board, and the board is supposed to be like the stewards of the company. They make the big decisions.
Right. So, you know, we've got this shareholder who's acting on his own, right?
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have board authorization, and he's doing it in a state where the law is very clear that, like, the board runs the show.
Right.
So this is where we get to the big legal question in Price v. Gurney.
Okay. What is it?
Which is, did the stockholders, like without authorization from the board, did they have the legal right to file this bankruptcy petition
right.
on behalf of the corporation?
Yeah, it's like whose decision is this to make?
Exactly.
That's the key question here.
So let's kind of walk through like how this case went through the courts.
Okay.
So initially, the district court, they approved the petition.
Okay. So at first, they were like, yeah, this is fine.
Yeah, they're like, okay, you know, seems like there's some weird stuff going on. Maybe the shareholders do have the right to do this.
Right.
But then, after they, you know, considered some motions from the bondholders committee
okay.
and from the corporation itself, the district court changed their mind and dismissed the petition.
Oh, wow. Okay. So there was some pushback.
Yeah, there was definitely pushback. It's interesting to think about, like, what was going on there.
Yeah, for sure.
But, you know, the story's not over.
Okay.
Gurney, our shareholder, he was not ready to give up.
Okay.
So he appealed the decision to the Court of Appeals.
Okay.
And the Court of Appeals actually reversed the dismissal.
Oh, wow. Okay. So they sided with the shareholders.
Yeah. They said, you know what? We think the shareholders do have a right to file in this situation.
Interesting.
So, you know, victory for the shareholders.
Right.
For now, at least. Yeah.
For now, exactly. But of course, it doesn't end there because the bondholders
right.
and the corporation, they're not just going to let this stand.
Of course not. Yeah.
So they appealed it all the way up to the Supreme Court.
Okay.
And the Supreme Court, drum roll please, they reversed the Court of Appeals decision.
Okay.
So they sided with the district court.
Wow. Okay. So back and forth. And finally, the Supreme Court says, no, the shareholders don't have this right.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's really interesting to see how, like, the lower courts kind of disagreed.
Yeah.
And then the Supreme Court comes in and is like, okay, here's how we're going to settle this.
Right.
And the Supreme Court's holding was basically that the bankruptcy court didn't even have the jurisdiction to consider a Chapter X petition.
That was filed by stockholders on behalf of a corporation if those stockholders didn't have the authority to do it under state law.
Right. So they're saying, like, this is a state law issue and we're not going to let bankruptcy courts kind of override that.
Exactly. Yeah. So they're really kind of drawing a line in the sand there.
Yeah. It's a jurisdictional issue, essentially.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the really important thing to remember is that state law, in this case, Ohio law, is the law that governs, like, who has the power to manage the corporation.
Right. Yeah.
So that's why they keep coming back to that.
Makes sense.
So let's dig into, like, the reasoning, the key points that the court made in their analysis.
Okay. Yeah. I'm curious to hear, like, how they justified this.
So, you know, they pointed to the language of the Bankruptcy Act.
Okay.
And they said, you know, the act is really clear that only the corporation itself can file a voluntary petition for a reorganization under Chapter X.
Okay. So it has to be the corporation.
Yeah. So then the question becomes, well, who speaks for the corporation?
Right. Who's making that decision for the corporation?
Exactly. And that's where, again, they go back to state law.
Right. Okay.
Because state law is what defines, like, you know, who has the authority to act on behalf of the corporation.
Makes sense.
And the court emphasized that filing a bankruptcy petition is not just like any old business decision.
Yeah.
This is a really big deal.
It's a huge deal.
Like, it can potentially determine, like, whether the company exists.
Right.
Like, in the future.
Yeah, it's not like deciding what kind of coffee to buy for the break room.
Exactly. Yeah, no, this is a major, major decision.
Oh, yeah.
And they actually made a distinction here, which I think is really helpful for understanding their logic.
Okay.
They said that filing a bankruptcy petition is not the same as a shareholder derivative action.
Okay, interesting. So explain that to me. What's the difference?
So a shareholder derivative action is it's a situation where shareholders can sue on behalf of the corporation to address, like, if the directors have breached their duties or done something that's harmed the company.
Right.
It's basically a way for shareholders to hold management accountable.
Okay, so it's like holding the board responsible for their actions.
Exactly, yeah. So it's about, like, you know, righting past wrongs or making sure that the board does the right thing.
Okay.
But the court said that, like, bankruptcy is different.
Okay.
Bankruptcy is not about, like, addressing past misconduct.
Right.
It's about potentially, like, restructuring the whole company.
Yeah.
Changing its relationships with its creditors.
Yeah. It's like changing the entire future of the company.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a much bigger, more fundamental action.
Yeah. That makes sense.
And the court was basically saying, like, look, federal bankruptcy courts, they can't just step in and overrule these state laws about corporate governance.
Yeah, like, the states have their own rules about how corporations are run, and bankruptcy courts can't just come in and say, well, we don't care about those rules.
Exactly, yeah. So they're really trying to maintain this kind of, you know, respect for the balance of power between the federal government and the state.
So it's about federalism, essentially.
Yeah, it's about federalism. And, you know, Justice John Douglas, who wrote the court's opinion, he said, and I'm just going to quote him directly here.
Okay.
He said, Congress has not given to stockholders the right to file petitions under Chapter X.
Okay, so pretty straightforward.
Yeah, very straightforward. He's basically saying, like, if Congress wanted shareholders to have this power, they would have said so.
Right.
And they didn't.
Okay, so that power stays with the board.
Yeah, exactly. And they also pointed out that if shareholders are really upset about, you know, how the board's managing things, they can file a derivative suit.
Right. That's their remedy.
That's their remedy.
Go to state court.
Go to state court.
Not bankruptcy court.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, so why does this case matter today? Like, why should our listeners care?
Yeah, that's the big question.
It's been almost 80 years.
Thanks.
What are the lasting implications? Well, I think Price v. Gurney really establishes this really important principle that still holds true.
Okay.
The power to manage a corporation, especially when it comes to really big decisions like filing for bankruptcy.
Yeah.
That power belongs to the board of directors, not to the shareholders.
So it's about, like, clarifying the lines of authority.
Yeah.
Shareholders might own the company in a sense, but they don't get to make all the decisions.
Right. So you can't, like, you know, as a shareholder, you can't just, like, be unhappy with how things are going and be like, well, I'm just going to file for bankruptcy and take over.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
You have other options. Like you said, derivative suits.
Yeah.
You can vote for different board members.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think another really important takeaway is that this case really highlights how, you know, our legal system, it's got this balance between federal law and state law.
Yeah, that's the federalism thing you were talking about. Exactly. Yeah, the federalism thing.
So in this case, bankruptcy is federal law, but corporations are creatures of state law.
Right.
So you have to kind of figure out how those two things interact.
Exactly. And the court in Price v. Gurney was very clear that they're not going to let federal bankruptcy law like trample all over state corporate governance rules.
Right. They're trying to respect that balance.
Exactly.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So this case, I mean, it comes up all the time still today in these like jurisdictional disputes.
Oh,
like
true.
Who has the power to file for bankruptcy? It's a really important precedent.
Right.
So just to kind of sum things up, you know, Price v. Gurney tells us that the power to start a corporate bankruptcy case, it belongs to whoever is authorized under state law, which is usually the board of directors.
Right.
Not the shareholders.
Oh, okay. So that's the key takeaway.
That's the key takeaway. And, you know, I think for our listeners who are, you know, really trying to get like a strong foundation in corporate law, this case is so fundamental.
It is, yeah.
It really helps you understand like how power works inside corporations.
Absolutely. And how like state and federal law kind of interact in this really important area.
Exactly. So here's a final thought, kind of a provocative question for our listeners to ponder.
Okay, hit me.
What happens if a board of directors is really messing things up? Like, what if they're not acting in the best interests of the company?
Right.
Or even, like, they're acting against the interests of the shareholders.
Yeah, what recourse do shareholders have in that situation?
Yeah, because Price v. Gurney says they can't just file for bankruptcy.
Right.
So what else can they do?
Right, that's a good question.
Yeah, what are the tools that shareholders have?
Yeah, it makes you think about like the effectiveness of things like derivative suits or, you know, other kind of like governance mechanism.
Yeah, exactly. So it's something to think about.
Definitely. A lot to unpack there.
Yeah. And that's all the time we have for today. But thanks for joining us for another deep dive.
Thanks for having me.
We'll see you next time.